From our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Washington Watch with Tony Perkins starts now.
Delegates and alternates, ladies and gentlemen, I am proud to announce that Senator J.D. Vance has the overwhelming support of this convention to be the next Vice President of the United States.
That was Iowa Attorney General Brenna Byrd announcing last night at the convention that the convention supported Donald Trump's selection of Ohio Senator J.D. Vance as his running mate. Thanks for tuning in for this Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Vance, who is closely allied to former President Trump's children, is scheduled to speak at the GOP convention tomorrow night. So who is J.D. Vance? What is his background and what does he stand for? Ben Johnson, senior writer for The Washington Stand, has some answers. Well, speaking of the convention, last night's appearance of Amber Rose has some Republicans cheering, saying the appearance of a liberal celebrity shows a big tent, while conservatives in the party say it is evidencing the party has drifted from its big ideas that have historically drawn voters into the fold. We'll talk about it with conservative Christian commentator Allie Beth Stuckey. As former President Donald Trump made an appearance last night at the GOP convention with his ear bandaged, Republicans have made clear they're going to uncover what they say was a failed mission this past Saturday by the Secret Service. The House Committee on Oversight and Accountability will hold a hearing next Monday. We're going to talk with Arizona Congressman Andy Biggs, a member of the committee.
I understand you can't comment. You have an independent review. But why would the Secret Service not be tasked with overseeing that building with a direct line of sight at the former president?
So, once again, I will not comment on specific facts or asserted facts with respect to the subject of the independent investigation. Both the review and the FBI's criminal investigation.
That was Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas at yesterday's White House briefing. Lawmakers are not looking at the lapse in security by the Secret Service last Saturday in isolation. The department has increasingly become a focus of lawmakers who say the director, Kimberly Cheadle, has focused more on diversity, equity, and inclusion than protection, safety, and security, the service's mission. We're going to talk with a former Secret Service agent, Tim Miller, president and founder of Lionheart International Services Group. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Also, let me encourage you to download the Stand Firm app, and you'll never miss another edition of Washington Watch or my daily Stand on the Word Bible devotional. You can get it at the App Store. That's Stand Firm. Download it on your phone today. Well, before I bring in our first guest, let's check in with Washington Watch correspondent Victoria Marshall, who's actually over in the convention center. Victoria, give us an update on the last 24 hours.
Thanks, Tony. We are here for day two of the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, where there's a lot of buzz and excitement about former President Donald Trump's pick of his vice presidential running candidate, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance. Both Vance and Trump were in attendance last night at the convention's speeches, and none of them spoke, but Trump walked into a standing ovation. He looked quite subdued, which is obviously makes sense for a man that just survived an assassination attempt. He had the bandage over his ear from where the shooter shot him. J.D. Vance did not speak either, but some notable speeches took place. Sean O'Brien, who is the president of the Teamster Union, spoke, which is the first time a union boss has spoken in the RNC's 120-year history. He castigated big business while kind of focusing on the American worker and what Washington can do to help their prospects, and thanked Donald Trump for inviting him to speak. Also, GOP official and lawyer Harmeet Dillon spoke. She gave a prayer while wearing a head covering. She gave a Sikh prayer. Some conservative commentators were not happy about that, as it wasn't an explicitly Christian prayer. Another notable speech was OnlyFans model and rapper Amber Rose talked about how she has woken up from the lies that were told to her by the media about Donald Trump, and now she is totally on board with the MAGA movement. Other conservative commentators were worried about what this means for the GOP and the RNC to bring bring in someone with her background to speak and give her a platform to speak and talk about Donald Trump. So we'll still be here for the rest of the week, but we'll keep bringing you updates. Thanks.
All right, Victoria, thank you very much. Well, the opening night of the GOP convention in Milwaukee was to focus on economic issues. But that left some conservatives scratching their heads at some of the speakers that were in the lineup. Now, this follows last week's disappointing platform decisions, which included backing away from pro-life language recognized in the platform for over 40 years. Now, the question is there reason to be concerned, or should you just kind of join the party and go along? Well, joining me now to discuss this is author and commentator Ali Beth Stuckey. She's the host of Relatable on Blaze TV and the author of the forthcoming book, Toxic Empathy, How Progressives Exploit Christian Compassion. Ali, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to see you.
Thank you so much, and I apologize for how casual I am today. Unfortunately,
Well, we're fine with that. We both kind of expressed disappointment about the GOP 24 platform, particularly regarding the issue of life, which is a major source of, you know, it's been a bridge for evangelicals into the political arena. So your thoughts? Oh, I think we just lost her. We're going to get her back. Let's get her back by phone, see if we can connect with her. You can't look at these things in isolation. And when you look at the party platform, which was adopted last night, there was no discussion, just as there was no discussion last week about the platform. But when you look at kind of the messaging coming out of the Republican convention, is there a reason to be concerned? And so I wanted to get Ali's take on that and where young evangelicals and particularly mothers are, how they're looking at the Republicans and the messaging that's coming out, not just from the platform or the absence thereof, but also in their lineup of speakers that they're highlighting this week at the RNC. Do we have her back? Okay. All right. We're going to get her back on here in just a minute, because if you haven't followed Ali, she's very insightful and has her pulse, I think, on the her finger on the pulse of the young evangelicals. Let me know as soon as we get her connected, and we'll talk with her. All right. Let's go. Let's go to, while we're waiting to connect with her, let's go to Ben Johnson. All right. We're gonna jump ahead here in our conversation regarding J.D. Vance selection of the President Trump as his VP.
My phone got too hot.
Okay. Oh. I think we've got, I think we have Allie now. Okay. All right, Allie, I think we got this worked out. Can you hear me?
Yes, I'm so sorry. Yes, I can hear you perfectly.
All right. So I wanted to get your thoughts. We were talking about the platform. You've expressed concerns about it. I was on the platform committee. I was not happy with it. When you take that, especially on the life issue, which has been a bridge for many evangelicals into the political process, the Republican Party in particular, when you take that in conjunction with some of the speakers that we're seeing at the convention, is there a reason to be concerned, or are we just making something out of nothing?
Yeah, I think that there is a really good reason to be concerned. It's certainly not nothing. At the same time, we understand that the Republican Party, that the RNC, is a secular institution. It doesn't necessarily have to follow all of our doctrines, but I think that we have a reason to ask, what influence do evangelicals really have over the Republican Party at this point? Have we become, as I heard someone say recently, the cheap date of the Republican Party? And metaphorically, you buy them a couple of drinks and there it goes. And you don't really need to vie for our vote at all. You don't have to give us anything. As long as you are a couple inches to the right of Biden, we have no option but to vote for you, or at least that's how a lot of people feel. That's not a great position to be in. if the president feels like he needs to vie for the votes of someone like Amber Rose and whoever follows her more than he needs to vie for the vote of evangelical pro-lifers, then we're in a very dangerous position, I would say, not just for the party, but for the country.
So, Allie, let me ask you this. You've mentioned a moment ago, you've got your finger on the pulse of young evangelical voters, and especially young mothers. What are you hearing?
Yes. You know what? Right now, I think it's really disheartening for a lot of pro-lifers like me, a lot of moms who, for some, even though every issue, really, I am first a Christian on, but then also a conservative on. And so it's not only the abortion issue for me, although that's the most important issue for me. And I would say that's true for a lot of women, especially more apolitical women. They're thinking, I don't really know everything about all the other issues, but I know abortion is wrong. And so if they are looking at the tickets right now, and they're looking at three essentially pro-choice options, then either they could feel apathetic about voting for anyone, they're just not quite as mobilized as they should be, or they could cast their vote for a third party. I'm not saying that that's the right decision for them, but I have heard that mentality. Okay, if I'm looking at three pro-choice candidates, why should I pick this Republican ticket? I'm not saying that's going to sway the direction of the election, but I think that he would do better to care about that vote than the vote of, say, someone who is following Amber Rose.
You mentioned it, and I've said this myself, the Republican Party is a secular political institution. It's not a church. But as Christians, and we're Christian first, those who follow Christ, follow the teaching of Scripture, we're Christian first, and we seek those in that affiliation with that which most clearly aligns with the Scripture. But we've had clear contrasts in the past, but as you point out, as they become more muddled, it makes that decision a little more difficult in terms of who to engage with.
Yes, exactly. I mean, and everyone has to think about this for themselves. At what point do you decide as a Christian that you are rewarding the compromise of the Republican Party by giving them your vote, no matter how far to the left they go? At the same time, I don't believe in being politically disengaged. And right now, we basically do have a binary system. And you are deciding between White House, Biden and Harris, who will do everything possible to make abortion easier, to make it easier for authorities to take a child out of their parents' home because the parent won't go along with gender ideology. And then you've got a potential White House, Trump Vance, who will not do those things. I don't think they think they're going to make it easier for a woman to get an abortion. I certainly don't think they're going to be on the side of gender ideology. So yes, that's better. And everyone has to wrestle in their conscience about what that looks like for them.
Yeah. The clearer the contrast, the better. But it's going to take some thinking and some praying. But by all means, everyone needs to vote. Allie Beth Stuckey, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much, and thanks for your strength.
All right. Thank you, Allie. All right, I'm going to talk more about this a little bit later, about how we navigate in a place where there's not as much moral clarity. But after the break, we're going to be joined by Congressman Andy Biggs. Don't go away.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So good to have you with us on this Tuesday. My apologies for we had a technical issue. Allie's phone actually overheated and we lost her connection. Things happen, especially when we're talking about the issue of life. That's been my experience going back to being a reporter nearly 35 years ago. Every time we did a story on abortion, there was some kind of equipment malfunction. Well, tell me there's not a spiritual aspect to this. All right, following Saturday's assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump, Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas acknowledged the failure by the U.S. Secret Service, but expressed 100% confidence in the Secret Service Director, Kimberly Cheadle. Now, the House Oversight and Accountability Committee received a briefing earlier today on the security failures that allowed someone to fire a rifle at former President Trump. Joining me now to discuss this and more is Congressman Andy Biggs, who is a member of the House Oversight and Accountability Committee. He represents the 5th Congressional District of Arizona. Congressman Biggs, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to see you.
Thanks, Tony. Good to be with you.
So, Congressman, what did you learn from the briefing today from Homeland Security, the Homeland Security Department?
I'm not going to mince words. I didn't receive notice of a hearing, of a briefing today, Tony. Which is really interesting that they would not tell me that there's a briefing. I was told there's going to be a briefing Monday, but it's actually going to be a hearing Monday. So I did not receive any notification of a briefing.
Well, that wouldn't, it wouldn't be surprising. So let's talk about the upcoming meeting on Monday that will take place. Chairman James Comer announcing that meeting. This is not happening in isolation. There's been other issues related to the Secret Service. Talk about that.
Yeah, so this goes way back. I mean, you've had misconduct on various missions that they were assigned to that were tangential to the missions. You've had other missions that have actually blown where they weren't where they were supposed to be when they needed to be there. And in this particular case, we're not quite sure exactly what happened yet. But we do know that there's a lot of questions to be asked, and there's information that I specifically want. And had I known about this briefing, I would have told them I expect to have this before Monday, but I didn't receive it. So anyways, the point is they've had problems, Tony, and they're overworked. I will grant them that. And I've gone through and I've been making my own calls to Secret Service agents that I know that are willing to talk to me off the record. And there's a lot of severe problems.
Well, looking through some of the data, it appears that the turnover rate has become pretty high within the service. There appears to be, and I'm going to talk about this in my next segment with a former Secret Service agent, that the DEI has become a focus. Diversity, equity, and inclusion has become a priority under this director.
That's right. So I'll just say there's several reasons why turnover is high, but certainly the fact that Director Chiles has put a focus on DEI. Don't forget that she said that she wanted to have within a year 30% of her agents to be women. She didn't talk about whether they were merit-based hirings or anything else. This is all about DEI. And so she's willing to take anybody that she thinks provides it with answering her diversity goals. Now, that's not the way their mission is designed. And that's part of the reason that some people are leaving. Others are leaving because, quite frankly, in a year like this year, with an election year, having all kinds of leave and overtime canceled, or excuse me, leave canceled, they're working overtime, where they could transfer somewhere else in the federal level and get jobs working 9 to 5, making the same kind of money, and live a regular life. So there's a lot of stress with this job. So it takes, That's why the DEI hires are so bad, Tony. You need people who really understand it and want to do this.
Well, I think what we saw on display, and I don't want to jump to conclusions, but there's some very obvious things that occurred Saturday. But the Secret Service is here. The American people see it. They saw it Saturday. But when you look at the DEI and kind of the woke ideology that's moving its way into our federal system of government, where, according to reports, women do not have to meet the same physical requirements as the men in terms of their physical ability to run, their strength, and this is a job that demands it. But this is the same thing as happening in our military. We just don't see it because it's not in front of the American people. But when the mission takes second seat to a political ideology, this is what happens.
Tony, I couldn't have said it any better, but the reality is we're seeing this all over the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Defense, and that's primacy on diversity, equity, and inclusion policies. You're seeing it in focusing on transgender surgeries. You're seeing it focused in the military anyways on abortion tourism. This is what you're seeing, and it is emasculating what our men and women of the military and Secret Service and these other Department of Homeland Security agencies are supposed to be. And they have a mission, and that the mission critical is to keep the homeland safe. And then when you're in Secret Service, it is to keep your assignment safe. So you have a VIP, it's an elected official, it's somebody else. Your job is to protect them at all costs. And you saw some of that with this, where the first dude, the first agent, he hops up on that podium right away, doesn't look towards where the shot came from. He's going in to provide cover. I'm not sure that we'll, if you look at the video close enough, I'm not sure you're going to see everyone respond that way, but you certainly saw that guy hop on the stage. And so there was good and bad and ugly in this incident with Donald Trump.
Yeah, amazing. Absolutely amazing. Just about 30 seconds left. Congressman Andy Biggs, what do you hope to find out on Monday in this hearing?
So what I want to know is I want the advanced paperwork. I want the advanced sheet. I would like to find out who was the lead agent who got there and ran the advance. I want to see what the agent asked for as far as material, manpower, et cetera, and whether that was whether he was denied some of that. The other thing I would like to know is were the counter snipers, were they green-lighted, or were they told that they were going to have to hold? And if they were told they were going to have to hold, I want to know who the supervisor was that made the determination to hold and when they saw the actual shooter. Those types of things, I think, are critical.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Congressman Andy Biggs, thanks so much for joining us today. Always good to talk with you.
Thanks, Tony. Take care.
All right, folks, after the break, a former Secret Service agent joins me with his insights into last week's failures, as well as what's going on in the department. That's next on Cold Way.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch, the website, TonyPerkins.com. The assassination attempt on Saturday that left President Trump wounded and retired Fire Chief Corey Campitore fatally wounded as he protected his wife and daughter from the gunfire has raised many questions about the protection the Secret Service provided the former president and now Republican nominee. Some claim the agency under its present leadership has lost sight of its mission. Joining me now to discuss this is Tim Miller, founder and president of Lionheart International Services Group. He's been in law enforcement and military for over 30 years, and he was a Secret Service special agent assigned to the Washington field office, coordinating all aspects of security for the president, vice president, and foreign heads of states on a regular basis. Tim, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. It's an honor to be with you.
Well, thank you, sir. I just want to first get your first reaction when you learned of the assassination attempt on Saturday.
Well, I think for all of us, it's kind of a watershed moment where you are in disbelief. Initially, the reports came out, as you know, that he had been shot. Thank God, by his grace, he was only wounded. And, you know, it obviously for all of us in the Secret Service was a shockwave, because those are the things that you never want to hear as a Secret Service agent, that a president of the United States or former has been targeted for assassination and almost killed.
Similar to law enforcement, but this is unique. You practice, you train, you prepare for something you hope never comes. And there's many mundane days in which it doesn't happen. There's nothing. And it's difficult to stay focused on mission. It's a very difficult job because, you know, last president, President Ronald Reagan, over 1981, it was. It doesn't happen often, but when it happens, it's a big deal. So how does the agency stay prepared for this, stay focused on their mission, and have they become distracted?
Well, Tony, I certainly think they have become distracted, and there's a number of reasons for that. But to answer your question, you got to have the brightest and the best protecting the press in the United States. And that means that you're hiring people that are motivated, that are committed, that are skilled, that are highly skilled, because what will end up happening inevitably, it happened with me, when you're in a campaign season, you go from one site to the next site to the next site. And this is where the failure occurred in this case. The Secret Service relies exceptionally heavily on the site advance agents. They're the ones that walk every square foot of a potential site, and they make sure that everything from where the bleachers are to where the bathrooms are to where would we go if we had to get out of there quick. But most importantly, we're looking at the threat landscape. And the threat landscape doesn't just include rifles. It's bombs, vehicles, people. What would you do if? Well, one of the first things you start with as a site agent, and we learned this in November 1963, where are the high places where someone with a rifle could shoot and kill the president? And unfortunately, the biggest thing that we look at from day one was missed.
There's been a lot of concern about the focus of the current director, the focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion versus, as you pointed out, the best and the brightest to accomplish the mission of the agency. Is that a fair criticism?
Well, I certainly think it's a fair criticism. And let me say this. I've been a Marine like you, Semper Fi. I've been a police officer. I've been a Secret Service agent. And each of these careers, I've worked right next to highly qualified, disciplined, committed females who did a fantastic job. But in this case, now all of a sudden it's, oh, no, it's not just about hiring qualified females. It's about we're going to take one third of the Secret Service and make it this particular group. Well, that's a recipe for formula. That means that guys out of the special operations communities or gals out of highly qualifying Army, military, police units, that they're not being evaluated. They're actually saying, oh, well, you're this particular group, so come on in. And I think that will compromise the mission. Tony, it's not just the Secret Service. You look at what's going on with the FBI. You look across the government landscape. There are a lot of problems and challenges. And it starts with saying, we're not going to hire the brightest and the best. We're only going to hire XXX group.
Well, Tim, I think you're absolutely right. It is pervasive across the federal government, not just the federal government, but we're seeing it at state government as well. But I was just talking with Congressman Andy Biggs about our military. You know, we just happened to see this on full display with the Secret Service, knowing what their mission is, how mission critical it is. But we're not seeing what's happening in the military that are operating under these same kind of the same woke ideology.
No, I totally agree, Tony, and the military is maybe the most concerning, because if you put people in harm's way that are not qualified, not committed, not sharing a belief that our country is worth fighting and dying for, that puts the whole country in jeopardy. And I think that's where what we saw play out on Saturday night is the greatest indicator that we have a problem that we're refusing to look in the eye and deal with. And that's going to lead to nothing but danger and destruction down the road.
All right. Tim, maybe next week we can follow up with you after the hearing and kind of get your analysis on what the director, Ms. Cheadle, has to say to Congress.
Tony, anytime you call, I'm there.
All right, sir. Have a great day.
Thank you.
All right, folks, when we come back, J.D. Vance, Senator J.D. Vance of Ohio, announced yesterday as Donald Trump's running mate. What do we know about this first-term senator from the Buckeye State? We're going to talk about that a little bit later in the next segment with Ben Johnson, senior writer with The Washington Stand. He's dug into his background, kind of looked at his voting record, his history, and we're going to talk about it. All right. Be sure and download the Stand Firm app so you can keep up with us every day. Don't go away.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. I just got an email from Congressman Biggs. He wanted to follow up. He said regarding the hearing that was, or the briefing that was supposed to take place today, after the secret, I'm reading from a statement released from the Oversight Committee that he just forwarded to me. After the Secret Service agreed to brief members of the House Oversight Committee on Tuesday, the Department of Homeland Security took over communications with the committee and has since refused to confirm a briefing time. The Oversight Committee has a long record of bipartisan oversight of the Secret Service, and the unprofessionalism we are witnessing from the current DHS leadership is unacceptable. So they refused to give them the briefing. So we'll see what happens next Monday. Our word for today comes from Psalm 55. My heart is severely pained within me, and the terrors of death have fallen upon me. Fearfulness and trembling have come upon me, and horror has overwhelmed me. So I said, oh, that I had wings like a dove, I would fly away and be at rest. You know, it reminds me of the old Calgon bath powder commercial. Calgon, take me away. I tell you what, it's a good thing we don't have wings, because I think a lot of us would be using them. And verse 7 says, indeed, I would wander far off and remain in the wilderness. I would hasten my escape from the windy storm and tempest. So, how do we find peace in these storms of life? Well, look at verse 16. As for me, I will call upon the Lord, and the Lord shall save me. Evening and morning and at noon I will pray and cry aloud, and he shall be my voice. There you have it. Pray, pray, pray. To join us in our journey through the Bible, go to 67742, text Bible to 67742, and you can be with us each day. All right, I want to go back to what we were talking about earlier with Allie Beth Stuckey, because I'm getting questions, I'm getting text messages, I've gotten them all last week, getting them now, getting calls. What are we to do? What are we to do? The Republican Party, over the last 40 years, they were successful when they built a big tent around big ideas. Now, a big tent without big ideas is just another three-ring circus. That's what the other party does. I want to go back to Ronald Reagan's short convention speech in Kansas City, Missouri, in August of 1976. All right, I was just a kid. But that was when Gerald Ford was the nominee. Now, Ford failed against Jimmy Carter. But Reagan prevailed 4 years later and launched the modern Republican Party. Now, just a couple of words of what he said in that speech. He said, may I just say some words? There are cynics, this is quoting from Ronald Reagan in 1976, There are cynics who say a party platform is something that no one bothers to read, and it doesn't very often amount to much. Whether it is different this time than it has ever been before, I believe the Republican Party is a platform that a banner of bold, unmistakable colors with no pale pastels. We have just heard a call to arms, he said, based on that platform, and a call to arms to really be successful in communicating and revealing to the American people the difference between this platform and the platform of the opposing party, which is nothing but a revamped and a reissue of a running of a late, late show of the thing that we've seen and heard for the last 40 years, end quote. Well, in part, Ronald Reagan was actually talking about the language supporting the protecting of the unborn, which appeared in that platform for the very first time. And it read as follows: "We protest the Supreme Court's intrusion into the family structure through its denial of the parents' obligation and right to guide their minor children. The Republican Party favors a continuance of the public dialogue on abortion and supports the efforts of those who seek enactment of a constitutional amendment to restore protection of the right to life for unborn children." Well, that continued. In fact, in 2020, the Life Plank, in part, it was an entire page long, but it said this in part: "Under the Fifth Amendment, protecting human life, the Constitution's guarantee that no one can be deprived of life, liberty, or property deliberately echoes the Declaration of Independence proclamation that all are endowed by their Creator with the inalienable right to life. Accordingly, we assert the sanctity of human life and affirm that the unborn child has a fundamental right to life which cannot be infringed. We support a human life amendment to the Constitution and legislation to make clear that the 14th Amendment's protections apply to children before birth." Well, it's changed a little bit in the present platform. In fact, it's changed a lot. Here's the language that was adopted last night: "We proudly stand for families and life. We believe that the 14th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States guarantees that no person can be denied life or liberty without due process, and that the states are therefore free to pass laws protecting those rights. After 51 years, because of us, that power has been given to the states and to a vote of the people. We will oppose late-term abortion while supporting mothers and policies that advance prenatal care, access to birth control, and IVF." Well, I want to focus just a moment. There's nothing in there that the 14th Amendment is to apply to the unborn. Now, I had an amendment in the platform committee to fix that, but Tennessee Senator Marsha Blackburn would not allow any amendments or even discussion. So I go back to the question, what are we to do? It's a question I'm getting. We've got a party that is certainly not where the Democratic Party is, but it is moving away from where it's been in terms of its strong, bold stand for life. Now, don't miss what I'm about to say. All right? Please hear me out. Here's what we're to do. You ready? We're to pray, we're to vote, and we're to stand. We need to pray that the party's nominee, President Trump, and those leading this effort would do a course correction. Pray that they would see this the way they should, that they would have a change of heart, a Damascus Road experience on this issue. But guess what? At the end of the day, we still need to vote. We need to vote for the candidate that most closely aligns with biblical truth. All right, as we were talking about that earlier with Allie, it gets a little more muddled, a little more difficult, but there's still a contrast. So we need to vote. Do not use this as an excuse not to vote. Now, there's the third thing. We need to pray, we need to vote, but we also need to stand for truth. We cannot say we're okay with this, okay? I'm not saying I'm okay with this. I'm not falling in line. I'm going to vote, absolutely. And I'm going to talk about the issues. But I am not going to say I'm okay with this. We do not have to give our time as volunteers or our money as supporters to those who are moving in the wrong direction. If President Trump says the life issue is a state issue, which I disagree with that, but then maybe we should give our time and money to those state candidates who will support life, marriage, and religious liberty. And increasingly, attorneys general at the state level are defending these issues, and state legislators. We need to be very involved at the local and the state level. And we need to give our time and our money to those candidates who are embracing the truth that every human life is worthy to be protected and welcomed into our world because it is created in the image of God. We're to pray. Pray for wisdom, pray for direction for those that are leading and those candidates. But we got to vote. There's no excuse not to vote. But then we have to stand. That means we may sometimes stand outside the party. We may not be inside the tent because I'm not going to be a part of a three-ring circus. I'm going to be a part of standing for truth. I'm not going to go away. I'm not going to fly away. I'm not going to hide. We're going to be out here, we're going to be talking, but we're going to be standing for truth. It's what we need to do. It's what we're called to be as salt and light. Pray, vote, stand. Well, former President Donald Trump announced yesterday at the Republican National Convention that he had selected Ohio Senator J.D. Vance as his vice presidential running mate. And he was catapulted to fame following the success of his 2016 book, Hillbilly Elegy. The Senator Vance was one of the only five senators who received a perfect score on FRC Action's scorecard for votes taken in 2023. But there's some pro-life advocates have expressed concern over recent positions that Senator Vance has taken regarding the life issue in particular. Just recently, he said he's okay with the abortion pill, which is now responsible for about 70% of abortions. So, who is Senator J.D. Vance, and how should we evaluate his elevation to the 2024 ticket? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Washington Stand senior writer and editor Ben Johnson, who has an article covering the issue at the Washington Stand today. Ben, welcome back to Washington Watch.
My pleasure as always.
So, Ben, Senator Vance is 39 years old. He'll be 40 next month and relatively new to politics, elected to the Senate in his first ever campaign in 2022. He took a unique route to the Senate and now his vice presidential candidacy. What was most surprising as you dug into his background?
Well, there aren't a lot of surprises. I guess probably the biggest surprise would be the fact that he worked in venture capital as much as he did. Of course, he came from a background of extreme poverty, substance abuse, and family chaos in Appalachian, Ohio. And he wrote about that, as you said, in Hillbilly Elegy, which was made into a film later on. And his very first at-bat, he was elected to the U.S. Senate against a former pro-life Democrat named Tim Ryan. But I would say the biggest surprise was simply the fact that he was elevated so high into the world of finance so quickly.
So there has been concerns over recent statements regarding his position on life. Is he a pro-life senator or not?
Well, as you noted, he had a pro-life voting record for the 19 months that he's been in the Senate. He's generally been considered fairly exemplary by FRC Action, Students for Life Action, and Susan B. Anthony list. What's concerning is the fact that in the last week and a half, he has made this backtrack on the issues. Particularly, he was speaking with Kristen Welker about a week and a half ago on Meet the Press, and he said that the Supreme Court had said that American women should have access to mifepristone, which he called a medication. He's wrong on both counts. First of all, mifepristone is the opposite of a medication. Medications make you better when you ingest them. Second of all, when he's speaking of the Supreme Court didn't say anything of the sort. It simply said that the people who sued, the pro-life doctors who sued, didn't have standing to sue the FDA. It was a standing issue. They did not touch the substance of the ruling whatsoever. That, coupled with some of the issues that you were speaking of earlier in this program about the pro-life platform being changed, made people very concerned that the entire Republican Party may be in a national retreat from the pro-life issue.
Well, let's talk about another important issue when we look at what is really being targeted today, and that is faith. What's his faith background?
His faith background is very mixed. He was raised in a Christian family and identified as Christian, but his family did not go to church very often. When they did, he said he did have some very positive memories of going to his father's evangelical church, said he learned some very good life lessons there, including racial harmony is one of the many lessons that he learned. But by the time he was in Yale Law School in about 2013, 2014, he was considering himself an atheist at that point. So he's married to a Hindu woman, a woman who was born in this country to Indian immigrants in San Diego, and they're raising their three children in an interfaith environment. About 2015, he began to take his faith seriously, and he began investigating particularly the Roman Catholic Church. He was baptized for the first time in his life by a Roman Catholic priest in 2019, and he's been a member of the Catholic Church ever since.
So he is a member of the Catholic Church. His wife is a practicing Hindu?
Yes. Yeah, she's a practicing Hindu. She found that she thought that it was a positive influence on her parents in some of the ways that she was raised in her upbringing.
Let's talk another set of issues that I think the senator has been outspoken on, and that is the whole issue of the gender ideology that the left has been championing. He's been pretty strong on that, has he not?
He really has. He introduced a bill that would have protected all minors from transgender surgeries and other procedures at the U.S. Senate level. So it would have been a national protection. Also, when the governor of my home state, our common home state, Ohio, Governor Mike DeWine, vetoed a bill that would have done that at the state level, he encouraged the legislators to overturn it, which they did. So he has been very outspoken on this issue. He has the confidence of many detransitioners, including Chloe Cole. So he has been very strong on this, which is good because it's stronger than the GOP platform is at this time.
Now, a lot of things surfacing just in the last few days about the criticism that he had of former President Trump previously, some of the really strong comments. Is that going to be an issue for him? And is there anything that you saw that showed what was it that turned him from being critical of Donald Trump to being a supporter?
Well, he's addressed this for some time. It came up in his U.S. Senate election as well. It really didn't get any traction, in part because Tim Ryan is a blue-collar Democrat and ran very much in that vein. So that it really didn't take off. But in addition, he's addressed this for a number of times. He simply said many conservatives were skeptical of Donald Trump. People associated with this program and others who've been on this program were skeptical at the time. And the fact that Donald Trump kept his promises, which were very specific in 2016. He kept very specific promises about people he would name to the judiciary and other issues, made him realize that he was a man of his word, and it changed his position on Donald Trump, as it did for many people.
Ben, final question for you as we come up to the end of the program. Any take on his foreign policy positions?
Well, he's certainly at a different position than many of the candidates in the recent past. He would describe himself as an America First candidate, very much in alignment with Donald Trump. So that seems to be the definitive factor that led Donald Trump to pick him, was the fact that he was very much anti-war. Although he served in the Marines during the War on Terror, he since said that he's regretted some of the stances that he took at that time. And that puts him very much in alignment with Donald Trump and the new Republican orthodoxy.
All right. Ben Johnson, thanks so much for joining us today. Great piece. And folks, you can see it as well. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. If you have the Stand Firm app, you'll be able to see it right there in your news feed. It's the Stand Firm app. Download it, read it. Pretty interesting piece that Ben put together. All right, folks, out of time for today, but I want to thank you for joining us. And until next time, I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.